Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
To be honest, I would put myself in the same category as D-Wade.
Now Artest is jumped over the scorer's table. Artest is in the stands.
This man was a bona fide scrub. He can't play.
When I go to the writers to tell me who can guard in this league, I'll put a gun to my own head.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast. It is Thursday, October 31st. Nick Whalen here with Alex Barutha. We are sponsored, as always, by FanDuel. We're sponsored by SeatGeek as well. We picked up a second sponsor, second week of the season. Hopefully this continues, and by week like 14, we have 14 sponsors. But for now, just FanDuel and SeatGeek. Make sure you check both of those out. First of all, it is Halloween. Nobody in the RotoWire office dressed up, thankfully. I didn't even consider it, frankly. My girlfriend texted me this morning a photo of like her entire office of like 40 plus people, every single person dressed up. They had a costume contest. Like, could you imagine if somebody even tried to organize that here?
I don't think anybody even wore like a jersey to the office today as like a try to, you know, shoot the gap.
No effort whatsoever. I love that. No one sent out even an email about it. It was just understood that nobody here is interested in dressing up. And I really, really appreciate that. Are you dressing up at all this weekend? Did you dress up last weekend?
No, my girlfriend is out of town, so I'm not going to any parties or anything. I was going to be watching basketball pretty much the entire time.
You didn't make it downtown for the Lil Yachty concert as part of Madison Freak Fest? He was the headliner at the annual Madison. Right, that's what I thought too.
Theoretically.
Better than the last couple of years, at least. I went as Date Mike from The Office last weekend, which turned out all right. I was able to go to a bar late at night and wait for the bartender to turn around so I could jump up on the pool table and play the pool stick like a guitar. So that was kind of the big highlight. But most people, unless you're a big fan of The Office, because that's really a one episode thing, like a lot of people just ask me, like, because I was carrying a pool stick around the whole night, like, oh, are you a professional billiards player? Yes, of course. I love billiards. So I ended up putting on a name tag to kind of act as a giveaway.
Okay.
Anyway, we had probably the best NBA fight that I can remember in a while last night. At least the fight itself plus the aftermath, maybe the best since Malice at the Palace. I mean, we've had some guys kind of swing at each other. Like Serge Ibaka seems like he's been wrapped up in a few of these. Robin Very Lopez true. Over the years. But rarely is it two guys who are as prominent as Karl-Anthony Towns, who's been arguably the best individual player in the league so far, and Joel Embiid, who ranks very high on the list of guys you would not want to fight. Ben Simmons got in on it, but for the most part, kind of a three-man fight. You know, no one from the Timberwolves really seemed interested in helping anyone out. Jeff Teague, if anything, was kind of trying to calm Embiid down, not his own guy. I'm sure you've seen all the angles and everything. I think the best part overall was Embiid knowing he's going to get kicked out, hyping up the crowd, and shadow boxing on his way to the locker room. And then, of course, you know, the battle spills over to Instagram and Twitter afterwards. I come away from this just feeling really bad for Karl-Anthony Towns overall.
Yeah. it was rough. He was put in a chokehold by Ben Simmons while on the ground. Mm-hmm.
I would give anything for Ben Simmons to be mic'd up because he was saying something to him as he was choking him.
Right. I mean, the NBA has all that. We're going to have to break into the league office, steal all that audio. It's not a good look for anybody necessarily.
I would debate you on that. I think the league and the teams will publicly decry this. You know, they will obviously they can't support this. We don't know what the suspensions are yet. Maybe they'll get announced while we're doing this podcast. There's a decent chance of that. I mean, I'm guessing at least three games for Embiid and Towns, maybe more. There weren't any actual punches, but this was about as bad as it gets, I guess, without it spilling over like into the crowd, which is a completely different level. And, you know, I think even the social media stuff alone, you know, might add to it. Like, you know, that could be punishable. We haven't really seen anybody go at it like this much. You know, but I think in the end, at the end, like, the NBA has to say, we don't support this, we don't condone this. But, I mean, this is what everyone was talking about. I think the league doesn't want two of its premier guys fighting, but nobody got hurt. And I think in some ways, like, the buzz that it generates almost in some ways offsets, like, the negativity of the core act, which was, you know, an on-court battle.
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer, like, more rivalries in the NBA, like player to player,
yes, right.
Team to team. I think the NBA, compared to other sports, especially football, lacks that. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of teams are, like,
I think sports in general, I mean, football, I think, is kind of going through that as well. Like, what's the biggest rivalry in football right now? It seems like it changes, you know, every 3 or 4 years.
It's always default. And that might be the one that I think has the most, like, it actually doesn't matter what the team's records
yes,
are.
Yes, true.
I don't think, you know, like, Celtics-Lakers used to be a rivalry, and now I legitimately would not even consider
yeah.
it. Like, that's not even something you would see hyped up on ESPN right. anymore.
Well, I think with the player movement, you know, rivalries come and go based on who's on what team, not which teams are playing. Like,
yes.
you know, Warriors-Cavs was a great rivalry for a few years. They played on Christmas, 3 years in a row? They played in the finals. Warriors-Cavs means absolutely nothing now.
Right. That would have been that's the downside of player movement, is that you're never going to – team rivalries are gone. But player rivalries are, you know, are just as alive as ever.
Right. I agree with that. I think if there was one criticism of people who, you know, are in support of more rivalries, I think it's that there were a lot of, you know, on-court rivalries that then as soon as the game is over, these guys go back to being friends, which
right.
I mean, I don't mind that. I think most people probably don't mind that, but I think there are a lot of old school people who don't want opponents to be friends. And this seems like a situation where, you know, this was not a social media stunt or anything like that. I think Joel Embiid does not respect Karl Anthony Towns as a player. I think Towns probably feels the same way. But it certainly does seem like Embiid got the best of him. I know some people will probably see the tweets and the Instagram messages as maybe a little bit over the top, but I mean, it's just kind of how things work, I guess, in 2019.
I want to know how, like, Embiid has these very specific rivalries, and I need to know yeah. how they have, like, Drummond. Like, I right. need to know how these things come up, because it's not like he's out for every center in the league. You know, it's not like Embiid's out here trying to kill Brooke Lopez yeah. and he's, like, talking smack to him.
I think it's guys he views as weak, right? I mean, Drummond and Towns kind of share that common, like, yeah, the numbers are good, but they haven't really done anything yet. I don't know. And Embiid himself always maintains that he doesn't start anything. You know, somebody else has to start it. So, I mean, who knows if that's actually true, but something clearly sparked this. I mean,
right.
I think it was back-to-back. Embiid got a bucket on Towns, and then Embiid went and doubled Towns and caused a turnover. And then, you know, they started fighting on the other side of the court while the action was going on at the Sixers basket. No, I mean, this was, we're what, a 9 days into the NBA season, and we already have one of the more memorable dust ups in years. So, I mean, in the long term, I don't think this really changes much. I mean, Philadelphia can probably coast without Embiid for a few games. If they're without Simmons and Embiid, you know, then maybe they run into some trouble. But I don't think we're looking at like a 20 game suspension for either of these guys.
No, I mean, the NBA and I think a lot of leagues are, they'll punish a lot harder if someone actually gets hurt. If
right.
no one gets hurt, they're just going to kind of pretend that it was not as bad as it theoretically.
It does always seem like punches are, or even attempted punches are more severe than, like, you know, you see guys like, this was more of just like a slow high school wrestling match, you know, where they were kind of locked together and just like tipped over onto the floor. Whereas like, it seems more severe. Like Serge Ibaka is the guy who comes to mind, has had a couple of those like big time
swings,
right hooks that have thankfully not connected.
Right.
But he's been suspended multiple games for just the intent. And then you wonder, you know, if he had connected and, you know, if somebody had suffered a severe concussion. You know, I think the NBA in some ways does kind of punish the result as opposed to, you know, the intent here. So I'm not expecting a big time suspension, probably nothing that affects the landscape of fantasy in the long term. I mean, next couple of weeks, if you're a Towns or an Embiid owner, you may be hurt, but I don't think any long term effects. Fantasy basketball fans, the NBA regular season is in full swing, and FanDuel is offering the most exciting ways to play fantasy basketball, no matter what you're looking for. FanDuel has something for everyone, tons of different contests and formats to choose from, and these contests start at just 25 cents per entry. All you have to do is pick a contest, choose your team, and enjoy watching your results in real time. You can play against your friends for bragging rights, or you can play against the public for millions of dollars in cash prizes. To take advantage of our special offer for new FanDuel users, sign up today at FanDuel.com/RW. That's FanDuel.com/RW. You'll get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription with that first deposit on FanDuel. That'll get you access to our DFS lineup optimizers, premium articles, draft software, everything you need to win your leagues this season. Just visit FanDuel.com/RW. Void where prohibited. On the other hand, in the late game last night, the Warriors got absolutely blitzed by Phoenix. This is the second time that they've trailed by, I think, 26 points or more at the end of a first quarter this year. They got murdered by Oklahoma City on Sunday. This was basically the exact same story. I think it was 41-14 at the end of the first.
I saw some people tweet the box score.
Yeah, and nothing. It really never got closer. I was watching this game along with the World Series last night, and Golden State, every time, I felt like every time I glanced at the TV, Golden State was missing a wide open three, or, you know, Kelly Oubre was just getting to the rim with no resistance whatsoever. And then on top of all that, I mean, it was obviously a terrible night for Golden State. You lose Steph Curry. He gets landed on awkwardly by Aaron Baines right on his left wrist. I thought he also took a shot to the ribs, too. It looked like he was kind of grabbing his ribs at first, but then it turns out broken left wrist or left hand. What is the official diagnosis?
Hand.
Left hand. I mean, it tough to say, you know, just seeing it happen, but he didn't appear to be in like excruciating pain. I think if there's one positive to take away, we don't know if he's going to get surgery yet. I think that's also a positive as far as these things go. So the best case scenario at this point is he probably just gets a splint and he's out like 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like. But that should be enough to completely take the Warriors out of the playoff picture if they weren't before.
I think at halftime of this game, I was ready to take them out of the playoff picture.
It's been weird so far. I think it became like very obvious within the first couple games that the Warriors were just not who. I think the depth, people understood the depth was bad, but they thought that, you know, Draymond and Curry and D'Angelo Russell could really make it work. It's not going to. Defense is some of the worst we've ever seen. They're giving up. I think they have the worst defense in the league. It would surprise me if they didn't. Yeah, they
have the worst defense ever in terms of defensive rating if this were to hold up over the course of a season.
Yeah, it's 118 defensive rating.
The record was set last year by the Cavs, for the record. So
my God.
I would say there's a pretty good chance that they break that going forward. I mean, not that Steph was really helping out a ton on the defensive end, but I mean, we were saying earlier, I could see them resting Draymond periodically now. I mean, having a guy like Draymond out on the floor with a bunch of, you know, half G League guys, Draymond can't really be Draymond in that setting. Like, part of what makes him so good is being able to play in his role with great players around him. And that's not really to take anything away from Draymond, but he's not the same guy when Steph and Clay and, you know, sometimes Kevin Durant are out there with him. And like, he's, you know, he had a triple double a couple nights ago against New Orleans that looked like maybe a turnaround type of game for Golden State. But I mean, one, to start out this way against the Suns, and two, to lose Curry, I think at some point we might just see this team, you know, kind of reverse course and just start focusing on getting the best pick that they can, and then kind of rebooting with a healthy Steph, a healthy Clay, a healthy Draymond, and then, you know, maybe a top five or a top three pick next year.
Right. And I mean, I don't know if they necessarily have to rest like Draymond. I mean, it's not like a team of D'Angelo Russell and Draymond and a bunch of like theoretical G Leaguers are winning you games. It's not like you're worried like, what if this team wins a game they're not supposed to against, I mean, who, I don't even know who's bagging this league anymore, because some, like, you know, the Wizards are apparently one of the best teams.
No, I mean, I guess I meant more like preserving Draymond. Like, don't,
oh, sure.
Like, you're not throwing him out there 35 minutes a night just to get spanked by 25 points.
For sure. You know? I mean, they can hopefully pull him in the middle of third quarters now.
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously not just going to sit him out the rest of the year, but it's a weird spot to be in. You know, it's something that they've, you know, really never had to deal with. And a lot of times, you know, when it's these really bad teams that it looks like the Warriors are kind of heading in that direction, it's guys, you know, like, look at Memphis. Like, you don't have any problem, even though they might win 25 games. Like, you want Jaren Jackson and Ja Morant out there 30 plus minutes a night. I don't know if you can say the same thing about a 30 plus year old Draymond Green. So looking at the Warriors schedule going forward, I count like maybe one or two games that they'll be, that you could say like are pretty winnable. One of those is Saturday against Charlotte. I mean, their upcoming schedule is, I'm not going to say home or away, but these are the teams coming up. Spurs tomorrow, Hornets Saturday, starting next week, Portland, Houston, Minnesota, OKC, Utah, the Lakers, Boston, New Orleans, Memphis, Dallas, Utah, OKC, Chicago, and Miami to close out the month of November.
Three wins would be nice, I think.
So those three wins being like maybe you catch OKC again.
I was going to say Grizzlies, Hornets, Bulls were the ones that stood out to me as possible wins.
Yeah.
I mean, you're probably going to get one more. I mean, you might. I don't know.
I don't know. But you also might lose. Like, those are 50-50 at best, right? I mean,
I think so.
It's not like the Grizzlies are, I mean, they're bad, but this version of the Warriors, I would argue, is just as bad.
We'll do a guess the lines for Hornets, man. Warriors.
They're at the Grizzlies, too. Oh.
Oh, boy.
You don't just go win at, was it FedEx Forum?
Grizzlies minus two? Yeah, I think it is. Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's just we knew the Warriors were going to struggle. I think that was probably clear in August. It became even more clear at the end of week one. But I think there was still this hope that they could figure things out. I mean, Steph had played, what, four games with D'Angelo Russell? Like, it was, yeah. In some ways, it was going to get better. You know, they weren't going to be down by 25 at the end of every first quarter. But now, you're kind of setting yourself back. I mean, Steph is going to be back, you know, maybe in December or January. But I mean, like you said, I mean, what is the best case? You go like 2-15 over your next 17 games?
Right. I think this was a team that, were they 12-1 to win the title?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that was the expected return of Klay at some point. You know, if they make the playoffs, they're just as dangerous as anybody type sure. of thing. But yeah, I would hope not too many people place that bet.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, how many teams are, you know, 12-1 to win the title and then are this bad before like a major injury, even like before the Steph injury is very right. obvious. That was just completely off the table.
Yep.
I can't.
They're plus 16,000 now to win the title. So they have the same odds as the Orlando Magic. Getting tickets online can be far too complicated with hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability. It's hard to know who to trust. That is why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place. You can easily find the seats you want for a price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. By searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to source for everything from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. I just used SeatGeek earlier this year, twice actually, to get tickets to Green Bay Packers games. No issues either way. Just downloaded the tickets, had them right on my phone, scanned them, boom, I was in. Super, super easy. That's how it works with SeatGeek. And best of all, our listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase of $30 or more. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code ROTONBA, ROTONBA. Again, that promo code is ROTOMBA for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase of $30 or more. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. I think this probably knocks Steph out of MVP consideration.
Yes.
The odds have already been updated, of course. He's now at plus 5,000, which is still pretty generous, honestly. I think he was he number three or four?
He was
in odds?
Three, I believe.
I think it was Giannis. Yeah, he might have been two on some sites, too. But that's, I mean, completely out of the door. I mean, I think he needed to probably average low to mid 30s in scoring. Oh, and the Warriors, sure. Yeah. The Warriors needed to win like at least 45 games. And yes. Both of those are probably now out the window.
Yeah. I mean, I was saying before the season, I thought a good hedge would be like Warriors under 48, but also Steph to win MVP. Because if they go over 48, yes. Good chance he wins MVP at plus 500. But yeah, I think at this point, the team is so bad and we can't be confident he's going to play every game. Even when he does return, is he going to average even 30 minutes a game once he's back?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's going to be the same kind of question that we just talked about with Draymond. You know, in a lot of it, I think will depend on how they are able to do without him. Like if they are able to, you know, pull together and somehow go 500 while Steph is out, you know, maybe they're kind of right there, and some of these other teams in the West keep beating each other up.
Right.
It's going to depend on where he's at health wise, how much time he misses, and then you know really where they are in the standings when he's back. We talked about MVP, you know, throughout the preseason and even into the beginning of last week. But based on what we've seen, you know, through four or five games for most teams, is there anybody who you feel better, worse about, whether it be for MVP or any of the other bets?
You know, Kawhi is interesting at plus 800. Just how well other than losing to the Suns, that the Clippers have looked a little. Apparently, the Suns are a top
two team
good
loss
in the league. But yeah, I mean, assuming he can play over 70 games, but we still don't know. And then Anthony Davis has got his odds moved up to plus 490. And obviously, that's going to be fueled a lot by the 40-20 game against the Grizzlies.
That was the strangest 40-20 game I've ever seen, by the way. I don't know if
it was
how much you were able to watch that. It was like it didn't feel like he had 40. It felt like he was like constantly falling over.
Right.
Like not an efficient night by any means. A lot of the rebounds were just like taps around the basket, but I mean, still impressive to do it in three quarters.
For sure. Other than that, you know, I don't know. Jokic just kind of off to a slow start. I don't really think LeBron's winning it based on the effort I've seen him put in. I really enjoyed him playing in the fourth quarter of that Grizzlies game just to try to pad some stats.
Yep. He needed it too. This is the second straight game where he just was super passive in the first half.
Yeah, it was honestly really funny to watch.
I'm with you on Kawhi, by the way. I think that's a great call. James mentioned that on the pod yesterday too. I mean, you and I talked about this throughout the offseason that we didn't think he was going to rest that much. And for some reason, I don't know why I didn't think that would translate to MVP. And I mean, he looked a little bit shaky in their first loss a few days ago, and obviously didn't play in their latest loss. But I mean, against the Lakers, he was the best player on the floor. I'm the ultimate LeBron defender, but I mean, Kawhi was completely lethal.
Dominant,
He was dominant, and the Clippers look like the best team in the league when he's out there, and that was without Paul George.
Right.
You know, I guess it's a little concerning that he has already sat out one game to rest, but it is a back-to-back. You know, it's early on. You can't really fault the Clippers for that. But if he ends up playing 70 to 73 games, I think that's more than enough, as long as the Clippers are, you know, kind of clearly reasserting themselves as the number one team in the West. I think there's a pretty good chance that if Houston falters, I think Harden's numbers are going to be quite a bit better. We'll get to him in a second. But I think if the Clippers win 10 more games in Houston, that might kind of break the tie in favor of Kawhi.
Harden's numbers are going to be better because every game they play is going to combine for 280 points. Dude, now.
What would you take over under 3.5 games this year that Harden scores 50 and Russ has a triple-double?
Over under 3?
They already did it once last year.
Did it once? I think they might go over.
Right. I mean, Russ, like, I don't know which of those sides do you feel less confident about, that Harden will have at least 4 50-point games, or that, because Russ is just as likely to get, like, he's 50-50 to get a triple-double basically any night, you know? So
I guess Harden, it has to be Harden, right?
If Harden has 6 50-point games, chances are, you know, Russ has had at least 3 triple-doubles in that span. But yeah, let's dive into that game. We'll get back to some bets in a little bit. 159-158,
you know,
The craziest non-overtime game I think I can remember in a while.
I famously took the under on this game.
Did that hit?
One of my better calls. No, I don't think.
It was a total like 400.
Yeah, I took under 475. Yeah, this was super weird. I tweeted out that the Wizards became basically the first team since the stat was tracked to shoot 75% true shooting and lose a game.
Yeah.
Just
wild stat,
in just insane box score. I got home from Ken Kreitz is in town, and we were out happy hour, and I went back to my apartment, was looking at scores, and was like, are you serious with this game? So I flipped it on, watched the fourth quarter. It was completely like no one could stop each other. It was turnstiles. Yeah. I think we could retroactively award Jeff Bezdelic coach of the year for his work on defense with the Rockets over the past couple years. I mean, this is insane. This is like the Mike D'Antoni. This is very on brand for the Rockets.
Rockets' defensive rating in this game was 144.
Yeah. I think this is just great for them. Like, this is who they are. They're going to give up 150 points. Harden's going to put up 60. Russ is going to have a minus net rating, but still get his triple-double. And they're going to barely beat a bad team.
Russ had a huge second half. Was terrible in the first half of this game. It was kind of part of the reason that they ultimately fell behind. But I mean, they put up 81 points in the second half.
That's insane.
Their scoring by quarter went 35-41, 35-48.
I mean, the Rockets just like don't look especially good right now. I mean,
they don't.
I mean, they're 3-1, but they have the second worst defense in the league.
Yeah.
Obviously, last night, you know, is not going to do them any favors. They're probably going to get stuck with a really bad defensive rating tag because of that, but I don't think that's...
It's going to take a while, I think, for that to kind of phase out, but I mean, this is a team, I know they have the reputation of being this high-scoring team, and for good reason, but last year they were right in the middle of the pack defensively. The year before that, they were top six in the league in terms of defensive rating. Like they have been a very good defensive team in the past, but like you said, it does seem like this might be the year where they just go like full run and gun.
It really might be. I mean, I think that's why they wanted to, or the argument for why this might work with Westbrook is that like he can handle all the full court transition situations, yep, and you know, save Harden for all the half court stuff. But I mean, Harden, you know, I guess the saving grace for the Rockets might be Harden's only shooting 38% from the field. That's going to increase. He's shooting 22% from three on 13 attempts a game.
Going into last night, he was like 5 of 32.
It's wild.
From three. Eric Gordon hasn't shot the ball well.
Yeah, Eric Gordon's also shooting like really bad. So, yeah. They haven't looked good, but also their offense isn't clicking right the way that it should.
Russ is also either just not taking threes, or when he is taking them, they're not going in. So that's also been kind of a side story. So I think in some ways they're lucky to be 3-1. Very easily could be 4-0. I mean, they probably should have beat the Bucks on opening night. And they have room to grow. I mean, the shooting's going to come around for sure for guys like Harden and Gordon. Westbrook, you know, is kind of a we'll see at best. But when you're getting, you know, four made threes out of guys like Daniel House, you know, PJ Tucker had been shooting it well. They've kind of been able to tread water there. These are some of the numbers that you alluded to with the true shooting. These are some of the numbers for the losing team last night. 63% field goal percentage. 56% from three, 20 of 36, 24 of 29 at the line, 31 assists on 57 makes, and that team lost the game. Unbelievable.
Do you think the Wizards might be kind of competitive this year, or do you think this is all smoke and mirrors? Because Beal's only shooting 40% from the field, and they
are... That
would
have been much worse going to last night, too.
Yeah, and they are staying competitive. Their net rating, I mean, they're basically like an even team, I think, right now in terms of net rating.
I'm not ready to put them in that category. I think they have some major weaknesses, the point guard position being number one.
Right.
You know, I, at some point, Isaiah Thomas has outplayed Ish Smith so far, and I don't know if that's really a good thing for this team in the long term. He had 17 and 10 last night. They did get Troy Brown back. I think that's fairly big. You know, I think eventually he ends up starting at the three instead of Isaac Bonga, who's given them almost nothing on the offensive end. But Thomas Bryan being really good, which is, you know, not a huge surprise. Brad Beal being awesome, not a surprise. Rui Hachimura, if he's able to be a consistent, I mean, he was 23 points, 3 of 3 from three last night, 9 of 15 overall. If he ends up just being like a really solid, like NBA role player right away as a rookie, like that does change things for me. But you look at the bench, like, I mean, the guys who played last night off the bench were Mo Wagner, Davis Bertans, Isaiah, and Troy Brown. So eventually you're flopping, you know, you're flip-flopping Brown and Bonga. Like, they don't have any depth. Jordan McRae is kind of like the other guy they're waiting to get back,
right,
which is not a great sign. I think it's a nice start for them. I mean, I will say I'm more confident that the Suns will be like a consistently okay team than I am that the Wizards will be.
100%.
Even though the competition level, like the Wizards could maybe finish with a better record than the Suns because of who they're playing.
Eastern Conference.
But like, I think the Suns' start is more like encouraging and like for real than the Wizards.
I agree with that.
All right. Elsewhere in the league last night, we found out today, actually, or just before we hopped in here, that Miles Turner is now week to week with an injury. Not the greatest sign. I mean, they're being intentionally vague, but week to week is considerably different than day to day.
That means a month in my head.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. You don't even throw the term week out there unless you're talking like minimum 3-4 games.
Right, and this is huge for them because they haven't looked good at all. You know, I think we kind of are realizing now, you know, how bad their bench is, it's insane how much they're. I mean, shout out to Malcolm Brogdon for like exceeding all expectations.
Yep.
I think that even probably the Pacers had for him. You know, I was looking at some stuff, you know, for the site, like what happens when Turner is off the court. Brogdon's got like a 32% usage. Like he's going to just carry this team even more if it's possible. He's going to be an all-star. I don't know. They're in some trouble with this injury because he's also their anchor defensively.
Yep.
Like I'm excited to see some Goga, but at the same time, like this is a bad scenario for them and they could miss the playoffs.
It's not great, but I think in some ways, you know, now you have more of a true lineup. You know, you can move Sabonis back up to center. You know, we're going to see some Goga, like you said. You can play a little bit smaller. You can surround Brogdon with another shooter. You know, I mean, not that Turner doesn't space the floor, but he's kind of been stagnant in that area. He hasn't really improved as a three-point shooter. He's just kind of always been a little bit above average. But yeah, I mean, it's for a team that's already thin, already without Oladipo, it's not ideal. I mean, they still were able to win last night. I mean, Turner only played like 10 minutes in that game, and they beat Brooklyn, who is very quietly now 1-3.
Yeah, the Brooklyn thing is a little odd right now. I mean, they definitely, the supporting cast around Irving is worse than it was last year for like D'Angelo Russell.
Right.
So that should not be entirely unexpected that they're knocking off to a great start. But this also is like reaffirming all the people who don't think Kyrie is actually that good, mm-hmm. or that like he, you know, his, whether it's a team chemistry thing, whether it's his, you know, defense not living up to his offense. You know, I mean, before LeBron came back to Cleveland, I mean, it's not like Irving was leading teams to wins or anything like that. So
that's exactly what I told James yesterday was, I mean, Kyrie has obviously grown as a player since 2013, but there is no evidence to suggest that when he's not surrounded by one LeBron James or two, a really strong infrastructure in Boston, that he can just operate as the guy and it doesn't matter who's around him. There are very few players in the league capable of doing that. And you know, even fewer point guards, I think. And you know, he's kind of found that out the hard way. I mean, to be fair, they have lost two games by 1 point. One of them on opening night, they should have won. If Jared Allen just hits one free throw, they beat Minnesota. They had the kind of fluky game against Memphis with John Morant going off. But I mean, a loss to a Pacers team that had looked really bad, and a convincing loss last night, I think. Maybe not time to sound the alarm bells, but you know, with as solid as the league has looked, I think top to bottom, that's maybe been one of the biggest takeaways, is that the teams that are winless or have one win are not necessarily the teams we thought would, you know, have one win. And some of the teams that have two or three wins are not the teams that we thought would have two or three. Right. So like some of those like gimme wins that you can look at on the schedule, like Brooklyn plays Phoenix, I think two or three games from now, a week ago, you would look at that and say, oh, that's an automatic win. I don't know that that's really the case anymore for a team like Brooklyn that's already struggling.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, I think, just a product of all the player movement in the offseason. There's more parity than ever before. I think that's like really being on display this early in the year with, you know, we've been doing a lot more gambling articles and looking at spreads. And it's just like, it seems like there's been a lot of teams that just are like easily covering, like the Wizards, for example, or the Suns just keep covering. And it's teams that we all expected to be bad that are actually more competitive than we thought. And yeah, I mean, I would rather have this than, you know, the Warriors thing that we've been dealing with the past, you know, 5 years, essentially.
And even before that, the Heat were in that position, not quite as drastically. I mean, it wasn't a given with Miami like it was with Golden State, but it really is kind of jarring. It's been so long since there hasn't been like this one prohibitive favorite. And, you know, I still would side with the Clippers, but it's by no means the lock of all locks that it had been, you know, if Golden State stays healthy. I want to ask you about the Bucks. Did you watch Bucks Celtics last night?
I did watch Bucks Celtics.
I don't know, man. the Bucks had very few games like that last year, if any. I'll say that. You know, a lot of it was just a really, really cold third quarter and second half overall. I don't even know if they hit a single three in the second half. It certainly didn't seem that way. But it's especially kind of a slap in the face, I think, to see Eric Bledsoe, one, not closing games, the man that you're paying to be your starting point guard. Two, averaging 10 points per game on 36% shooting, 20% from three, 54% at the line, turning it over a ton. Meanwhile, Malcolm Brogdon is averaging like 20 and 12 and looking like a far superior player for virtually the same price.
Yes. I mean, even just on this team, you watch, if you watch these games and it's reflected like in the minutes, like George Hill definitely outplaying Bledsoe. It's not really close.
Not even close.
You feel Hill on the court more than you do Bledsoe. And maybe that's a product of Bledsoe playing more with like Giannis and Middleton, but I don't know. It's, you know, I understand wanting or thinking that you can just run this offense through Giannis and go five out and that it doesn't really matter that much who's around them or who's around him as long as they're capable three-point shooters and good defenders, like the LeBron method. Or, you know, like, hey, let's just throw 3-and-D guys around and see what happens. But that's also going to cause a lot of like potential meltdowns if guys aren't hitting threes and there's no other like second ball handler who you can, you know, rely upon. Like Bledsoe is, he's good at getting into the lane and slipping past guys, but he's not like he's not a layup artist or anything like that. Like, he usually passes out of those situations.
Middleton's, or gets blocked.
Middleton's a post-up guy from, like, 15 feet shooting mid-rangers. Like, they're not really playmakers. And so, you know, the Bucks definitely feel like they need a second guy, especially when you see, you know, guys of Giannis's caliber or even worse paired up with someone else, and that's working out fine. Like, you see Doncic and Porzingis. Like, that's kind of what you are – what seems like you need to have.
There's no precedent in the current NBA for a team with a guy like Chris Middleton as your second best player to win a title. It doesn't matter who the first guy is. Like, it just, the only team that you can point to is 2011 Dallas. And I would argue that that was a different NBA era.
It 100% was. If you like watch those finals games,
it's not the same basketball.
Stars were
not clustered in the way that they are now. This Bucks team is not going to go beat the Clippers in the finals. I mean, I asked you the same question a couple weeks ago. Like, how many guys on the Sixers would you rather have than Middleton and Bledsoe?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about, like,
it's not good.
It was surprising that the 76ers had worse odds than the Bucks to win the title.
Yeah.
Because I understand Giannis is getting all the benefit of the doubt, and the Bucks get the benefit of the doubt because...
And they've earned that.
They've earned it because they had the best record in the league. Yeah. But it is concerning. Especially, I mean, the loss to the Heat. I mean, basically, the only game I missed was the Cleveland game, which that's the fine one to miss,
And that went about as you'd think. I mean, I know some people would say, you know, Toronto, you know, maybe didn't have like that super, superstar number two. I think Pascal Siakam is way better. And we're seeing that now. He's way better than Chris Middleton or Eric Bledsoe. I don't think that's close.
And they had Lowry. Lowry's better than Bledsoe.
Lowry is at worst, you know, on his worst night is like an average night for Bledsoe. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's in Toronto, I know, has the depth. Milwaukee has great depth 2 through 8. That's important. But I think at some point, we've just seen it over and over. You can, even the best players in the game struggle to win finals when they have an all-star who's much better than either of those two guys next to them.
Right. The bench of like Wes Matthews, George Hill, Connaughton, or Ilyasova, Korver, that's the bench of a team with two stars on it.
Yes.
Or three, not one.
Right.
So that's, I think that's where some of the issues are stemming, is that the Bucks have the bench of a team that has two stars instead of one.
Right. I think the 4 through 10 guys are not the problem at all. I think they have very good depth throughout the roster. You know, we've seen some other teams that have been star heavy, that have the bench has kind of been their undoing, you know, if somebody gets hurt and you're all of a sudden, you know, throwing out Joel Anthony for 20 minutes a night, you're in real trouble. Like, the Bucks don't have that problem, but with the way that these contracts line up, with the way that some of these guys have played, like, they're very limited, I think, in terms of what they can do, their path to getting a second star. They're just, you know, there aren't that many guys available, especially with Beal, you know, re-upping in Washington. There's just, it's really tough to see a path to improvement. It's still early. You know, I still think this team is going to be one or two in the East. But it's been a less than encouraging start, I think, for those who thought this would just be an easy 65 win season.
Yeah, I agree.
I get big time 2009 Cavs vibes, where it was LeBron averaging 37, 8.5 assists, 1.5 steals, 1 block. And then after that, it was, you know, Mo Williams and Anton Jamison each averaging 16 a game.
Yeah, I mean, Giannis right now for 36 minutes is averaging like 27, 15, 9, and 3.5 steals and blocks.
And he's fouled out of 2 games, and he's had to kind of play with that in the back of his head. I think that was last night for sure. When, you know, Marcus Smart is out there for one reason, and it's to antagonize and draw charges on Giannis. And I think Giannis knows that and can't really be quite as comfortable doing what he wants to do. And that's been a big factor so far. Certainly, it was probably the main factor in the loss to Miami, was Giannis wasn't out there for the end of that game.
For sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think the Bucks, you know, if you're John Horst, like, this has gone pretty badly so far in terms of how you really hoped Bledsoe would come back strong and kind of use these last couple of years as motivation. And to me, it just seems like he's playing scared. Like, he just, you know, kind of almost playing not to lose individually, if that's possible. Like, just hasn't been as aggressive.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And he was great during the regular season last year. That's what people forget. I think he was so bad in the playoffs that, you know, it's easy to forget. Like, he had a legitimate All-Star case. You know, if one or two people had gotten hurt in the East, he was probably right there. But I mean, so far, it's, you know, I think we've seen a lot of like try to trade Bledsoe takes on Twitter. Who are you trading for? I mean, James brought up Evan Fournier. Like, that's the caliber of player you're getting back for this guy right now, based on how he's playing and based on the contract.
You're right. It feels like he's playing like he already went 0 for 5 before the game starts.
Yes.
Like, where he's like, you know, I'll let my other, you know, teammates.
He's passing up. Yeah, he just doesn't want to miss shots. I feel like, yeah, he's like very aware, I think, of the perception around him, and is kind of scared to worsen that. So, yeah, not great so far for the Milwaukee Bucks. But like I said, I think we both think that they'll eventually kind of right the ship, at least in the regular season. Let's talk real quickly before we have to get out of here about Rookie of the Year. So there's a prop out there, Rookie of the Year, Zion versus the field, which I thought was interesting. On the FanDuel Sportsbook, Zion is still the favorite for Rookie of the Year. He's at plus 180. He was the heavy favorite before that, definitely minus money. Ja Morant, plus 275. Barrett, plus 450. Rui, up to plus 900. Tyler Hero at plus 1,000. And Michael Porter Jr., who was yet to play a single second in the NBA, is still at plus 1,400.
Oh, you never know. Will Barton's questionable tonight.
This might be the night.
Hero's actually looked like really good. It's very surprising. Not that like I thought he was going to be a bust or anything, but I was not expecting him to actually come out and average like 16 a game, a good shooting that seems sustainable and everything like that. I don't know. That's whether it's Zion or the field is tough because
the real quickly the numbers on that are Zion plus 180, the field minus 230.
I think that's just a bet on is Zion gonna play 50 plus games.
If he's healthy for 50 plus games, he's winning it.
I agree.
I think it's all about health at this point, and it's going to be close because even if he doesn't suffer another injury the rest of the way, I can't imagine, back to backs, three games in four nights, that type of thing. You would think, they'll be as cautious as possible. And I'm not super confident that he's just going to be like, this is going to be a one-time thing and he's just good to go the rest of the way.
Right.
The question, I guess, is, if you're looking away from the field, like I like the field, I guess, in that bet, just kind of hedging on Zion's health. But if you had to bet on another player, who would it be right now?
I don't know. I mean, RJ Barrett has, he's been putting up numbers, which is always important. I mean, he's averaging 18 a game on 48% shooting. I mean, I think we discussed in a pod, we talked about this before, but usually the Rookie of the Year almost always averages over 15 points a game.
Yep.
It's more than anything, it's the points. You have to be so good. You have to be almost elite immediately at something else. So I think Barrett has a really good chance. I think it's basically just between Barrett and Morant right now.
Yep.
And Morant has looked good at points, and he's averaging. But the problem is he's a 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. And
I don't think people care about that for rookie of the year.
For rookie of the year, I mean they probably not. But I think people expected him to come in and be a better passer than scorer, and right now it's looking like the opposite.
True.
But I think right now maybe Barrett. I don't have a good feel for the Ja versus RJ debate right now.
So far, Barrett's been super efficient, way more efficient than we thought. Rebounding has been there. Like he's going to. I think if you add up points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, Barrett's going to be the overall leader in the non-Zion category for those. Just because he rebounds at a crazy rate for a guy who's basically playing point guard. But I think Morant is going to have like the highlight plays. He's going to have the memorable games. He already has one against Brooklyn.
Right.
I think he now becomes kind of the clubhouse leader. It's his to lose, assuming Zion doesn't play enough games. But I think it's a pretty clear top three: Zion, Morant, Barrett. Even with Zion not playing yet, and then you kind of get into tier two: Rui, Hero, even Kobe White can probably be thrown in there. Guys who've looked really good so far, but probably need a little bit of help in terms of an injury or a performance reduction from those top three guys to really make a run at it.
Kobe White would be sneaky. I mean, if Satoransky goes down with an injury or something like that. Kobe White could definitely sneak into a role because he's had a couple games where it's like 15-7.
He might just take over. I mean, the Bulls look terrible. Like,
they look real bad.
If they start like 2-10, like at what point do you just turn it over to him?
Yeah, I mean, one of my like best bets the other night was like Bulls -1 at Cleveland. I'm like, there's no way the Bulls are this bad. Like, this is the perfect point for some positive regression. No, I think this has finally convinced me. Like, I don't know how they're this bad, but they are.
Yep. All right, college football guys are beating down the door to the studio here, so we got to wrap this up. But should be a fun night. Three games on the slate tonight, and then the usual heavy Friday, Saturday slate. We will be back next week.